Andrew de Longjumeau is the first one leaving in 1248, and then a Flemish friar by the name of William of Rubruque, who gives us a very detailed account of what went down at the court. And both of them came back with the same rather depressing reports, as they expected Louis the Ninth to act as their slave, and they gave Louis different directives of what to do, which really didn't have anything to do with Jerusalem, but to help in a great Mongol offensive. Now, assuming that any of these operations could be coordinated in anything like a strategy is one point. But what these, and particularly these three first missions revealed, is there was a whole world out there far beyond the conception that any of the Western Europeans had ever had. It was their first inkling of what China was, the Far East, because previously all they had were legends and garbled reports, a very, very suspect classical tradition of the East, going back to fabulous, you know, reports and legends that you could find in Herodotus and later in Roman authors. And it opened up a whole new world and possibility of exploration. And there were various ways to react to this. One was to see the Mongols as a terrible foe and to be fearful, try to explain them in Christian and religious terms, you know, the apocalypse. The other was to see potential commercial and political advantages. And that was what was picked up at the end of the 13th century, just as the crusading warfare is passing. And I think the best way to conclude this lecture is just a brief comment on the Polo family that went out there. As I mentioned them before, they were Venetians. They were not particularly well thought of by the Genoese. But the two brothers, Niccolo and Matteo, went out for about close to 15 years. They were at the court of Kublai Khan, who was the descendant of Genghis Khan, a grandson who had conquered Sung China finally in 1279. They returned to Western Europe and then went back with the son of Niccolo, and that's the famous Marco Polo. And they spent another 20 years operating as secretaries of the Khan, traveling all through the Chinese Empire. Marco got back and reported his travels in an account while he was in a dungeon. You know, he'd been captured by the Genoese in one of the naval wars with Venetians. And he recorded all of this, reported it, was written down, and published in instant success. And what happened out of that those Polo missions was, in my mind, a very significant shift. It was part of that whole shift you even see in the Mediterranean economy of moving towards commerce and the notion of discovery, of going out and finding out where these places are and then perhaps capitalizing on them. And that was a significant shift. It's part of that general shift in which Jerusalem, the religious mission, begins to lose its importance and other considerations come in. And so with Marco Polo and that mission, the Mongols assume a very different position in the European imagination. There's enormous amount of trade and technology that comes through. The Genoese, I mentioned, are exploiting that. And over the course of the 14th century, there is even more exchange. One of the gifts is gunpowder, and it's significant that our first artillery pieces are essentially in both Western Europe and Mongol China at the same time. In the 1360s, we've got illustrations of the same type of primitive bombard, which really is an indication of how much exchange went on. And that Mongol conquest and domination of the Eurasian landmass for almost two centuries opened up contact between the two civilizations on the fringe, on the edges of the Eurasian landmass, that is Latin Christendom in the Chinese world and Central Asia, and everything in between, the Islamic world, the Christians had some inkling of. And that vision was very powerful. And when that Mongol Empire disintegrated, that vision was still there. And one could argue is that the vision that comes out of the late 13th century associated with the Mongols and crusading and these strange missions fed into, wasn't the main reason, but fed into the motives for the launching of the European Age of Discovery, ultimately sailing west in order to get east. It's that image of the court of Kublai Khan, the hopes of converting China, the commercial possibilities, the alliances, finding that other fabulous race out there who could perhaps be allies against the Islamic foe, that is one of the stimuli for, ironically, the Age of Discovery, the European expansion in the 15th and 16th century, which is arguably the most important event that has occurred in the last five centuries. So with that thought, I would like to close with the Mongols. And in our next lecture, we're going to look at the crusades that are being launched to take back Jerusalem.